world's greatest podcast network.
You're listening to the Defenestrate Media Network.
Hey everybody, it's Jess Harnell, the voice of Wacko from Animaniacs, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, because you know what's good.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I am your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friends. In the north, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
From the shadows, the ever mysterious... Oh, my God.
Do you want to start over?
Gamer Goth.
Gamer.
Yeah, I got to do that right. From the shadows, the ever mysterious Gamer Goth, Miss Patricia Heltman.
Hello.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman Laird Jeff Bell.
What's my name?
It's the script. It's new. It's still new. I'm still working on the memorization. It's hard.
I needed you off book a week ago.
I know. You're about to fire me. All right. How was your week ere this first week of winter?
I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I prefer a rainy day, mm-hmm. but I'll take snow and cold. I'm fucking delighted. So.
He is a Nordic god, you know.
Oh. It's true. I'm not delighted, but my low back hurts, so.
All that shoveling.
I shoveled a lot of snow, man.
Yeah, that happened to me on, what was the last storm, Friday?
Yeah.
I'm out shoveling, and back's like, what are you doing? You have a machine. Go get it, dummy.
Go get it.
So I got my snow blower. Yeah. I was like, but it's not a lot of snow, but it's heavy because it's got water under it. Damn it.
Yeah, I got an apartment, so I didn't have to touch anything.
Yeah.
You don't even worry about
same,
that shit.
Same
yeah.
deal.
Yeah. And I had covered parking, so I didn't have to scrape off my car.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know.
See?
Yeah.
This is my second year of not having to do that.
Yeah.
It's very delightful.
Yeah. But no, I think you all know that how much I need out of the apartment and into a house. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
Then I will have to shovel with you.
That is true.
Right now.
You too will become a shoveler.
For all the inconvenience of this fucking place I live. I didn't have to touch snow. I just had to walk out to my car. You know, the one with heated seats.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Which I never turn on, but if Tiffany takes the car in the morning to run the kid to school, then I'll get in the car and I won't notice that the seat heater's on high.
And then your butt's hot and you're like,
yeah, by the time I'm halfway to work, I'm like, why is it so fucking hot?
Why is my ass on fire?
She's also got another little thing that she started doing, and that's setting my radio to the goddamn Christmas Carols channel.
Oh, no.
And then turning it all the way up, because she knows I hate Christmas. Bah. Humbug.
Have you accidentally Whamageddoned already?
Nope.
Nope. Oh, good.
Nope. Nor Whamageddon, nor Little Drummer Boy. I'm still safe this season.
Still safe.
Lucky.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm not.
And Mariah Carey, that's the other one, right? You got to avoid.
That's unavoidable. You can't have a game with that one.
Well, that will be unavoidable because one of my favorite Christmas movies to watch will be Love Actually, and that song is featured in Love Actually. So,
well, it's the song is the greatest burn of all time.
Yeah.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. I just want you. You see?
Right.
I don't want a lot. I'll settle.
I'll settle.
I'll take you.
I'll settle.
Whatever.
Ho, ho, ho.
I just want you to get off your ass and get over here. That's what I want. Yeah.
My parents are out of town.
That was almost the sound of coffee coming out of my nose just now,
I
folks, in case anybody wondered what that was.
Achievement unlocked.
That's awesome. how's the season starting? I mean, it started for you last Friday, Mr. Bell. in the retail world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, Black Friday was all right. Yeah. Honestly, it was not as busy as I was expecting. Mm. Mostly because the Nerd Store, our owners, are sucking up all the fucking oxygen in the valley. Mm-hmm. with both their Black Friday sale, which had a lot more shit on sale, mm-hmm.
And
then
the pop-up store.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys remember Punk or not.
Yes.
Was on X96 as a special guest a lot for many, many years. He passed away, mm-hmm. and left
oh my god, so much Seth.
An insanely large collection of collectible toys, comics, etc. Mm-hmm. And his family is overwhelmed with it. Mm-hmm. So they reached out to Roger and Charles and said, please help. Every Saturday, I think until the middle of January.
Yeah.
There's so much shit. Wow.
There's enough stuff to sell. Yeah.
And that's at the Valley Fair Mall in what used to be, I think,
Foot Action. Yeah.
It's just a few doors down from the Nerd Store. And they refresh stock every week.
Yep.
They're bringing in new and taking out old every fucking week.
Damn. It's insane.
It is really nuts.
I went to go see if there was Star Trek stuff I wanted, and they took me in the pack and they were showing me everything, and I was just like, oh my God. And they're like, yeah, we'll have a new truck next week with different stuff. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, Punk was a collector, definitely.
He was a serious collector.
Well, and all of his stuff is like pristine. Like, what did he do? Right. Just buy it and then put it in a box?
Yep. That is exactly what he did.
Wow.
Bought it, left it in the box, put it in a room. Yeah. He never took it out to play with it. He never took it out to even look at it. He just kept it in the box and kept it in mint condition with the idea that he'd sell it one day and be rich from it. And he never sold it before he died, so maybe his family will get rich from it. And Roger will make some money from it, that's for sure.
That's kind of what I've been thinking a lot lately, because my best friend died at 39, and I'm like, I don't want stuff. I want money now. I don't want stuff now.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, stuff is the worst.
Right. Like, it used to make me happy, but now I'm just kind of like, it just sits there gathering dust.
Yeah.
I don't know if it makes me happy anymore.
My mother never collected a lot of stuff. I mean, she would keep stuff and then she'd throw it away within a few years. But just the idea she's getting close. We know it could be any time now that she passes away. And it's like, there's still a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I go, there's still a lot of stuff and I don't have room. I got too much stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get rid of my stuff.
Yep. I want more stuff. I need more space for more stuff. I'm still in the stuff.
You're still in the stuff phase. Good for you. Good for you.
Well,
we're in the middle of,
which is perfect because kind of I uploaded
George Carlin
a photo.
Routine. That's the George Carlin routine. What's your house? It's a place for your stuff.
It's my stuff.
When you get too much stuff, you got to get a bigger house. That's all there is to it.
Yep. Yes. Oh my gosh, that is a good skit. I gotta watch him.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
It's a place for your stuff. And he talked about the place for your stuff all the time. I thought, yeah, that's right. A house is a place for your stuff. And boy, do I got a lot of stuff. I'm looking at cutting back on what I collect in comic books just because I'm filling up these Instacrate boxes so quickly with limited series that are crap from Marvel and DC. And honestly... if I really wanted to read them, they'll be putting out a trade within a month of the damn book being done, of the last issue being done. So I don't know why I'm like, why am I wasting my money on these things? So I think I'm going to stick with it's habit. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stick with Tom King and his maxi series that he's doing for DC Black Label, and everything else I'm pretty much limited. Will be anything that comes from the independent guys, because you may never see them again. You know, sure. even in trade, you may never see them again. So, yeah.
What the fuck?
So, yeah, I'll be picking up some of that stuff as I go. But otherwise, yeah, I'm like, wow. The Marvel and DC ones, I'm like, why are you wasting my money with this shitty limited series that I'm picking up out of habit? Just because I like the character, you bastards.
They're like, because right. it prints money for us. That's why we do it.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
All right.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I guess we've talked about it, so let's get into the news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice,
Christine McVie, singer-songwriter behind some of Fleetwood Mac's greatest hits, passed away Wednesday following a brief illness, according to a statement posted by her family. She was 79 years old. We kindly ask that you respect the family's privacy at this extremely painful time. We would like everyone to keep Christine in their hearts and remember the life of an incredible human being and revered musician who was loved universally. So here we are talking about it. And what are you going to do?
She's freaking gorgeous. I wonder how old she is in that photo. 2017.
So, yes, 70-something.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
I don't know. She was gorgeous. She was for rock and roll. She was kind of an older lady when it came to, you know, the heyday of Fleetwood Mac. She was in her 30s.
Yeah.
And God damn.
Right.
Compared, you know, and she's standing there next to, she'd have to, you know, she's sharing a stage with, what's her name, the witch. And
Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks, who was 17 and just, you know, looked every bit the 17-year-old rock and roll girl. And she was still just gorgeous the whole time. And I'm like, yeah, this is, I just, yeah.
Yep.
Love Fleetwood Mac. I loved them. And she's the first one to go, isn't she? Or did Mick Fleetwood go? Is he still alive?
Pretty sure he's still alive.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's the first to go. And it's sad because I'm like, oh, man. Such a great band.
It's weird. In this CNN article, the only tweet they show is from Garbage.
Nice.
Okay.
I love Garbage.
Okay. I do, too.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Who else is dead? Al Strobel.
I've asked that all the time.
Al Strobel, who played Philip Michael Gerard, a.k.a. Mike, in Twin Peaks, passed away on December 2nd at the age of 83. Lost his arm in a car accident at the age of 17, was cast in the Twin Peaks pilot to walk out of an elevator merely as a tribute to the fugitive's one-armed man, but he became more than just a reference as soon as David Lynch heard his deep voice. Hang on a sec. And then I heard Al Strobel's voice, which is an incredible voice. I had to write something for that voice.
Oh,
David Lynch remembers in Room to Dream.
Yes. That's amazing.
Hello, Coop. Sorry.
Gordon. Gordon Cole.
Yep. Clarence Gilliard Jr., character actor, best known for his role of Theo in Die Hard, has passed away. He was 66 years old, had a decades-long career as an actor and author, regular role on Matlock. Was the original partner on Walker, Texas Ranger. In addition to Die Hard, his film credits include Left Behind Trilogy, which he played a preacher, the original Top Gun. He played Sundown Williams. His passing was confirmed. Every once in a while, we get this, here's who told us when someone dies,
yeah.
You know? And this one was by the University of Nevada, Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
They're like, well, we should put that out, I guess.
Oh.
I mean.
Hey, Professor Gilliard died, and wasn't he kind of famous? Yeah, maybe we should let people know about that.
Yeah. Yeah, born Christmas Eve, 1955. He grew up in a military family, originally hailed from New Orleans, Louisiana. Moved frequently, et cetera, et cetera. Transitioned into television after a role in 1979 on stage playing bleacher bums. Did Different Strokes, Facts of Life, Simon and Simon. I remember him on Simon and Simon. Yep, and his first regular work came as Officer Benjamin Webster in the final season of Chips. Do, 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 do.
He was always kind of, he was that guy. You know, if you needed it, if you needed a person of color who had a certain look, you know, he kind of looked, I mean, he was really smart, and he looked really smart all the time.
Looks like a professor.
Yeah. And you'd bring him on and you're like, I remember him so well from television, just growing up in the 70s and 80s, watching TV, and this guy, he would be on everything. He'd show up on everything. Like you said, you remember him from Simon and Simon. I mean, yeah. And he was never a small part. He was always a featured role. You know, even if he was coming on as a guest star, he was featured. So, yeah.
I remember him from Matlock when I was sick and would stay home from school because there was nothing else on.
Matlock. I don't know. I was a Price is Right junkie when I was sick.
Days of Our Lives.
Yeah.
Well, and I've explained that before. That's what the girls were watching that were my age. So that's what I was watching.
Yeah. Right.
You'd go over to like Angie's house and watch Days of Our Lives.
Mm-hmm.
With Victor Kouriakis and Stefano DeMero with his missing fingers and his stupid glove. Brad William Henke, longtime actor, former NFL player, known for his roles in Orange and the New Black and Justified, has passed away. Publicist confirmed to CBS News Thursday. He was 56 years old.
Oh.
Dozens of film and television credits dating back to the mid-90s, according to IMDb. He's arguably best known for his role as prison security guard, Desi Piscatella, in Orange is the New Black. I do remember him in that. He was very good.
Yes, very good. Very hard role to... Ooh.
Yeah.
I was like, I hate him so much because I'm so in love with Janeway. So like in my brain canon, I'm just like,
Well, that's the sign of a good character actor. He makes you hate him.
Yeah. Yeah, he
makes
did really
you
good.
Really
I was
hate
like,
him.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Other notable credits include Justified, Lost, October Road, Draft Day, and the post-apocalyptic miniseries The Stand. He did play football prior to becoming an actor, played at the University of Arizona, and then played for the New York Giants after being drafted in the fourth round of the 1989 draft. Played with the Broncos for a season, went to the Super Bowl in 1990, then he transitioned into acting after his football career was derailed by injuries, as they tend to do. All right.
Hey, you got a ring out of it. That's a big deal. Yeah, that's a cap for your career. Is you got the ring, you go home. You
know?
Kept saying to you, and then you married a girl. John Kasdan is on a press tour promoting the upcoming Disney Plus film Willow, a follow-up to the Ron Howard-directed 1988 film of the same name. Hold on, putting a pin in this.
Wait a minute, 88?
Sorry, buddy.
Oh, man.
So I tried putting Willow on the other day for Tiffany and the kid. They made it 10 minutes.
Yeah.
10 minutes.
It doesn't hold up very well.
No.
Yeah, it is a little rough, these things to watch.
It's pure nostalgia now if I watch it, because it does not hold up.
Yeah. Solo, a Star Wars story, has come up several times in the press tour, which Kasdan co-wrote with his dad, Lawrence Kasdan. I love Lawrence Kasdan.
Lawrence Kasdan.
Yep.
Yep.
Hmm.
Well, I figured it, with a name like Kasdan and he's in the industry, he was probably somehow related to Larry Kasdan. Yeah.
Yeah. So Lawrence Kasdan, Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of the Indiana Jones movies, as I recall.
Yep.
He was involved in. Anyway, in one interview, John Kasdan was quite candid and forthright about the original plans for the Solo sequels, his willingness to do more, and his hopes that we see more of Alden Ehrenreich. I got to be saying that wrong. Back in the Millennium Falcon for more Star Wars adventures. I agree with him.
Yep.
I liked Solo, a Star Wars story.
I thought it was a good movie.
I would like to see another one.
I was confused at the end, but that was only because I hadn't been watching the animated series, and I didn't know that was important.
Yeah.
You know? That you needed to have been watching the animated series, because I was like, what the hell is he doing alive?
Yeah.
And then he was half the man he used to be the last time I saw him. But, you know, my son was like, well, no, in the animated series, this happened. And I was like, oh, I should have been watching that, huh?
I keep trying to watch it.
I watched some of it. The problem is that as they went on, they had two different groups working on them. And so they wind up out of sync. Like the episodes, it's like you think you're following a linear story, but you're not.
Oh.
It actually keeps doubling back on itself. And you're like, okay, where are we now?
As I have explained to several people who champion those.
Yeah.
If you got to take a goddamn spreadsheet to explain to me the order in which I need to watch these.
Word. Absolutely.
I don't need a goddamn AI to watch TV. I'll skip it and watch something else. And this comes from a guy who loved Firefly.
Yeah.
You know, so with that coming in all out of order. But of course, there were only 13 of those. So.
I'm the guy who goes when he wants to do a watch of the original series of Star Trek, will go and pull a list for season one so that I get him in the shooting order, not the release order.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the uniforms change so quickly. But that's me. But when it comes to Clone Wars, I'm like, I guess this is where we're at. So we're gonna go with this now, you know.
I was going to say, did they do that with any other ones or just original series?
Pretty much with original. I mean, we don't know for sure. If they went out of order at all with Next Gen, you would never notice because the uniforms wouldn't have changed.
Yeah.
So
you do notice in an original series, though, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
I never thought of watching it that way.
I think with MASH, I got a feeling that...
Oh.
There were, at least season one, there were episodes that were meant to look like more like the movie, so I got the feeling those were shot first in the run, and then then more things got shot after that. So you see the generals change over and over again.
Yeah.
The three generals that are supposed to be leading the MASH unit from back at I-Corps, but you never. It's like they kept changing. Everything kept changing in the early part of it. That I'm like, I think there was. You know, obviously they kept fucking up with the writers. They, you know, one time Hawkeye says, you know, dear dad, I just bought a moose. She'll be the daughter you never had. And then later he says, kiss mom and sis. And then later in the series, you find out he was an only child. His mom had died. It was like the writers just couldn't get anything right in the first, you know, they just kept, they, I think in the first season, they thought no one will ever watch these again.
Right.
But I do get the feeling that based on how the uniforms change up a little bit and how they make the feel of the original movie to, like, Spearchucker disappearing for episodes at a time. And it's like, and then he'd be back in the season one. It's like, yeah, I think they shot a few right at the beginning. And then after that, kind of pushed into what we got used to in season two. But yeah, the same with Star Trek, same with Firefly, went out of order in its airing
because
a show about an episode about a war wasn't exciting enough, so they had to do the train robbery first.
Oh, the bastards. The original Art Experience show, hosted by Dynamite Entertainment's Nick Barucci, is auctioning off three of George Perez's signature Hawaiian shirts, which were handmade by his wife, Carol Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
Items go up for auction December 2nd. Proceeds from the shirts will go directly to Flynn. During his career, George could often be seen on the convention circuit wearing bright and colorful button-down shirts featuring various animated characters and other designs.
Not that panda one.
Yeah.
That's badass.
One of his most notable was a pink shirt with the character of Lamb Chop on it. Mm-hmm. The shirts were made for him by his wife, and three of her handmade shirts will be up for sale. These feature patterns that include Tweety and Sylvester, a frolicking panda, and hot air balloons.
Mm-hmm.
Rest in power, George Perez.
Yes.
You're going to be missed, buddy. Well, that's it for the news, gang.
All right, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're talking moving pictures.
To some, the sound of a baby babbling doesn't mean much, but that's not true. They're testing out vowels and consonants and trying different sounds. And by 12 months, their babbling is beginning to take on meaning. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
We can share a love divine.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture.
Let's get some... let's talk about what you've been watching this week. Let's start with Jess.
Ooh, I caught a couple of the episodes of Wednesday, and it's quite delightful. I'm enjoying that. And then went on a Christmas binge and watched the animated 1966 How the Grinch Stole Christmas, which is one of my favorites. And then watched a couple of Doctor Who Christmas episodes. So nice. Specifically the one when we first meet Donna Noble. And then the following one with Kylie Minogue on the Titanic.
I love that one.
That one's one of my favorites. So
Kylie Minogue in a French maid's outfit? Are you kidding me?
I know, right?
And those boots?
Delightful. They were delightful boots as well. I agree. I did notice the boots. So, but yeah, that's really kind of all I watched, though, this week. What about you guys?
Yeah, Pat?
I finished the animated Resident Evil in prep for the comic. So I did watch that, but that was recent. I haven't read the comic yet. that's good. I know a lot of people dislike the animated Resident Evil stuff for various reasons, but I'm totally into it. So just give me more, because they've done 4 movies and now they've done a little 4-part series. So I'm loving it.
I'll watch it.
It's only 4 episodes.
Yeah.
So get on it.
Just as far as that goes, it's like I've been enjoying the Witcher animated stuff.
Yeah, I haven't watched that yet, but I need to.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't mind animated tag-alongs at all.
I rewatched Prodigy and prepping for watching the new Prodigy, which is very exciting for me because I really enjoy it. I always get super weird when Admiral Janeway shows up. I'm just like, oh my god, I love you so much. I want to be best friends with Kate Mulgrew. What else did I watch? I watched the Christmas movie that I was forced to watch was White Christmas. Yeah, that's my sister's into that. So she's like, this is what we're watching. And we're like, okay. I'm not going to make it through without falling asleep.
Mm-hmm. Year, that movie takes on a whole new meaning.
Yeah.
Tune into the Left Show yesterday for more on White Christmas.
White Christmas.
No.
I like it.
No.
Sorry.
I think that's it. I know I watched other stuff, but I can't remember now.
Let me tell you how delightful I find Jenny Ortega.
Oh, yes.
I mean, brilliant. Wednesday is fucking brilliant. I enjoyed it the whole way through. I pulled a little trick on Tiffany when the second to the last episode finished up, and I went, well, that's it for season one.
Oh.
And she is so used to being screwed by television that she's like, yeah, okay, I guess we'll wait for next year. And I'm like, oh, my joke fell flat. We talked about it at the shop yesterday, but everything I guessed was right.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I guessed was right. I've never really done that before, so I was really proud of myself. And yet, I still enjoyed watching it all unfold. It did very well. Very fun show. I hope from what we understand, Wednesday, well, we'll talk about it in the news. It's gotta get a season two, you know, it absolutely,
I really hope it does. 'Cause the dynamic between Wednesday and her little roommate, yep. I loved that. That actress is so captivating. I was like, please put her on screen more. She's just delighting me every time she comes on screen. And I was always happy whenever, you know, I'm happy that she's in every episode, basically, almost every episode. So, yeah, it was just, she's delightful. Everything about it, I want to see more.
Even Fred Armiston didn't bug the shit out of me.
Fred Armisen was one of my favorite things in that.
Yep.
His Uncle Fester was perfect. The idea, he talked about this. He said, Uncle Fester isn't maniacal. He's just happy doing what he does. And so I just played him as always happy. He's just delighted by everything around him. Even though it's weird and dark, he's delighted by it.
Yep.
And it's not an evil way. He's just delighted by it.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's perfect Uncle Fester.
Yeah, and then for no reason whatsoever that I certainly won't attribute to consumption of edibles, I rewatched Tucker and Dale versus Evil last night.
Nice.
What a fucking great fucking movie. It has been way too long since I've seen it. Tiffany made it halfway through and fell asleep and woke up going, I need to finish that movie. Because, you know, she hates gore and violence. She just can't handle it. And yet in this one, she was laughing her ass off until she passed out. So, I can't remember the name of the actor who plays the big bearded guy. But Alan Tudyk was a delight, you know. Mm-hmm. The rest of the cast, they did fine. They're mostly forgettable. But goddamn, what a funny fucking movie. Anyway, what about you, boss?
So for me this week, I watched all of Welcome to Wrexham.
Yay! Football! Goal!
You sons of bitches. I'm into footy. Now I'm fully into footy. I'm following Wrexham. Like, what the hell? This was what they set out to achieve with this documentary, they succeeded in with me. I'm totally hooked. I'm pissed about the offsides rule. I'm horrified by hooliganism. I don't understand, you know, there's certain things I just do not understand. And at the same time, I'm just like, just completely delighted. And I found out that the town where my grandmother grew up before she came to America has a football team. So I'll have to be that supporter probably somehow.
I'll tell you, because of that fucking show, mm-hmm. I popped over to their website and was like, I'm buying a jersey.
There you go.
No, they have been sold out for months.
Yeah, that show is... I mean, the fact that it was, the idea was is to the whole point was to revitalize this town, and this little town in North Wales, just south of Liverpool, basically, and oh my God, did they succeed? And it was such a delight to watch that show. I couldn't believe how good that show was.
Now you got to watch Ted Lasso.
Yeah, because now I'm totally into football. So yeah, I could watch that. And we're talking proper football, not American football. Not
you,
run,
you
run,
don't have
ball.
To be into football for Ted Lasso, trust me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just have to have an
Wrexham,
Apple plan.
Wrexham was a wrecking ball for me. It was a Wrexham ball for me. It made me I was like, I don't care about sports. God damn it, I care about sports. the best part about it is that you get to see exciting football games because you're seeing only the highlights.
Yeah,
in Wrexham, I've watched some World Cup. I usually watch World Cup at least one or two games in World Cup. By the way, first game in the 16, the U.S. is out. So the U.S. team is out. They've already lost. They had to take on the Netherlands. I'm like, you're dead. You're out.
Yeah, but it was. I did watch as close to the entirety of USA versus Iran.
Yeah,
and that was a very exciting one goal game.
Mm-hmm. That was a good game.
Yep.
Yeah,
that was a good game.
And US Britain. I watched that one. US and England, and that was a good game too.
That was a tie. That was a draw.
That was a game where, as I watched it, I was like, oh, we don't have a striker. We are completely lacking a striker.
Over here with your brand new football knowledge.
Yep, I know all this stuff about football now. most people don't know this who don't have a big Scottish flag sitting behind them like I do. But the 30th is St. Andrew's Day. St. Andrew was the patron saint of Scotland. So I had to watch something Scottish, and I discovered this little movie I hadn't watched yet called Stone of Destiny. Starring Charlie Cox and Kate Mara.
Mm.
Huh.
And Charlie Cox is very young in this. I think he was cast because he looked a lot like, what's his name from Dead Poets Society, the main character from Dead Poets Society, Thomas something or other. But anyway, it's kind of the look they gave him. And he was young because I'm like, he's not Scottish, he's English. And as I was looking stuff up about it, they're like, yeah, why did they cast an English actor and an American actor to play the two leads in a Scottish film? Couldn't they find other Scots to play the parts? But they didn't. Apparently they didn't go looking for him.
Where's it streaming?
It's on Tubi.
Tubi?
Tubi.
Tubi. T-U-B-I. Tubi. And it's streaming on Tubi. It's called Stone of Destiny. I wouldn't say it's a great movie. It's okay. It's good. For what it is, it's all about this group of college students, university students, who decide to go and steal the Stone of Destiny, or the Stone of Scone, from Westminster and bring it back to Scotland.
In the
1950s. So it's kind of, that's about the time when a lot of the Free Scotland movement started happening, was in the 50s. They didn't really catch on. Scotland didn't get its own parliament for another decade or two. But yeah, it was quite the story. It's all fiction, but it's delightful to see. It feels like it could have happened. I quite enjoyed it. And like I said, there were parts I was like, I feel like you're skipping a lot just because you've got a lot more going on at the end. And so you cut a lot out in the middle.
Yeah.
That I felt there was some character development that happened very quickly. And I was like, wow, I think I needed a little more. You went from here just meeting to here where you're best buds. And I'm like, I need that in between where you kind of have that gel moment. But yeah, they were trying to obviously come in under 2 hours on that one. Prodigy this week. If this was the season finale, which it isn't, it would have been great as a season finale because it ended with a cliffhanger. But this episode was really good. It gave us the backstories of the other characters that haven't had backstories yet. And we learn what the fuck is going on with the Diviner and what this whole thing is about. There are some obvious cartoon moments where, you know, things just had to move along because it's a cartoon, but it's still a solid piece once again. And the only thing I was one disappointment was is it ended. It was obvious when it ended, but it ended. And I was like, I really want more. I want you telling me more stories about these kids, you know, on their way. You find out Jankum Pog, who's the Tellarite, was on a sleeper ship that before the Tellarites joined the Federation, they launched a whole bunch of sleeper ships out into deep space to explore deep space. And he happened to be on one that went through the Delta Quadrant and got woken up by the computer. The computer would not recognize his commands unless he identified himself by his full name, which is why he only ever identifies himself by his full name, because that computer beat him into it. It just would not let him. He couldn't get a goddamn thing done without that computer saying, please identify by full name. Jankum Pog wants you to do this.
Nice.
So, yeah. It just makes the character so much more fun and gives you kind of almost this horrific little, oh, there's trauma behind your little quirk that you have about saying your whole name all the time. let's see. We had Stargirl. Okay, did not see that coming. I knew there was something up, but I didn't see that coming. That's cool. At first, I was kind of like, okay, I can see where this is going. Predictable, predictable, predictable. And then they threw this wrench in the works, and I was like, I didn't see that one coming. I thought something else was going to happen. I didn't see that coming. And they did a really good job with it. Probably too good of a job, because there's a lot of moments where I'm like, wait, what? Why would he have said this or this or this? But, you know, whatever. And then Kung Fu, the mysticism runs high. And we learned the backstory of the new guy, Bo, and why he is what he is and did what he did and everything. So it seemed to be backstory week for a lot of these shows I watch. But yeah, so that was it. That's what I watched. Let's do some moving picture news.
Samuel L. Jackson's got a thing or two to say to Quentin Tarantino.
Damn right he does.
Quentin Tarantino popped up on the Two Bears, One Cave podcast with Tom Segura, which I listen to from time to time when I run out of politics shit. And I happened to hear this one. And then he got to Marvel movies, and he's like, "Man, nobody's as good as me. They're all just blah." And it's like, you know, I disagree.
Nobody becomes a movie star from those movies. Nobody becomes a movie star. It's like,
are you shitting me?
What are you talking about?
I really like Quentin Tarantino.
Who'd heard of Chris Hemsworth before Thor?
Right.
And how many movies has he done since Thor that we have gone to see because he's Chris Hemsworth?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't tell me they don't make movie stars.
Right. And like, I get the idea where he's like, oh, it just kind of, you know, like when young kids have really rich parents or really notable parents, and they're like, well, we're not going to give our kids any of our money. And it's like, no, but they have your name. Like, that's plenty. Mm-hmm. That's plenty on there. So I kind of understand that perspective a little bit, that it may not challenge them as much as the movies back mm-hmm. in the 90s used to. But to be fair, Quentin Tarantino, I love him, don't get me wrong. He just puts a lot of gore and crazy shit in his movies, and that's how he makes his movies successful. Like there's shortcuts mm-hmm. on both sides. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
So yeah, Samuel L. Jackson's like, now listen here, motherfucker. Before I put snakes on your plane. But then Simu Liu popped up and was like, you know, if it were just up to Tarantino and Scorsese, you know, I never would have helmed a $1 billion movie.
That's true.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. That's very true. He would have been relegated to a secondary character.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Daredevil Born Again, season 2, ?
Season 2?
Receives a promising update. Details say that Michael Gandolfini and his contract may have revealed Daredevil Born Again's potential second season.
Oh.
The rest of this article is a big fat fucking guess. Over and over and over again.
But I just wanted to point out that maybe this is the universe's way of making up for all the times that I've gotten really into a season 1 of something and then they've canceled it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that before they even drop my season 1, I get a season 2 confirmation.
I think it's an asterisk season 2. I think it's one of those where they're like, you know, the showrunner's like, we're going to do this many seasons. They're like, okay, let's see how season 1 does. But meanwhile, he signs Gandolfini and he's like, okay, we're signing you for the duration. And if we get a season 2, you're on for season 2 as well. So we're basically, it's keeping him, you know, there instead of going off and doing another movie or another series when they need, you know, they're going to need him for that role, whatever it is. Is it Foggy? Who's he playing? But yeah,
I don't think it's been announced yet who he's playing. Yeah.
If he's got a 2-season deal, it's a big role, which is why I wondered if it was Foggy. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'll miss the original Foggy from that. Well, I can't say the original Foggy because that was Jon Favreau.
Right.
Nice.
We all miss the original Foggy.
But he's done so much better with as a director and showrunner for, you know, The Mandalorian. But yeah, no, it's great. It'll be great to see. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Gandolfini anyway. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think it's basically like, well, we tagged him for 2 seasons. Just because that's his arc. And
they just called dibs on him.
Yeah, basically we called dibs. We got to have you, you know, you're locked into contract. Which means if they have to announce, they have to let him know. And by doing that, the other advantage is they have to let that actor know as soon as possible whether or not they're going to go right back into filming. Otherwise, right. The actor can exercise an option and just go do something else and fuck them for getting their filming done because they took too long. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Where'd we get to? Dread 2, starring Carl Urban. Rumored to be happening in a possible shared universe. I loved Carl Urban's Dread.
Yeah.
I did too. Creepy fucking movie. The way that that Lena, what's her name?
Mm-hmm. Hedley.
Would kill people was so brilliantly fucked up. You know, it left an indelible mark on my brain. Just not fucking mess with her. And that was before Cersei.
Yep.
But yeah, it's rumors are saying that Dread 2 is back in development. Info comes from Giant Freaking Robot, so you know it's bullshit. Who says the sequel's back in development, but could mean that Carl Urban would be starring in the new movie. And maybe even a TV series. And since it's Giant Freaking Robot, they're probably going to do comic books and anime. You know, and goddamn sparkles from the sky and unicorns.
Well, they have been doing comic books since, you know, what, the 70s?
Yeah.
The 80s? They've been doing Judge Dredd comic books. But no. Yeah, I would like to see Dredd. I would love to see Carl Urban come back as Judge Dredd. I want to see it.
He was great.
And now that he's not, you know, going to have to worry about doing a Star Trek movie, let's get him over doing Judge Dredd again.
God damn it. Thanks for that, Dick. Oh. Hey, remember when you were happy? Neener, neener. Andor season 2 is set to pick up 1 year later. And for people that wanted to know why there's so few aliens on the Empire's planets that they're visiting, it's because they're the Nazis and they don't like non-humans. That's why everybody at the Empire meetings is a human. Because they don't like anybody else. That's what makes, what's his name, Thrawn?
So unique. Yeah.
So blissfully, bluely, and unique. Anyway, this is basically just an article where some questions are asked and some long things are given. But basically, yeah, season 2 will pick up a year later, which I think is great. Because it takes a lot long to plan terrorist ops. That 90s show released a trailer.
They are not skipping a beat. I mean, that felt exactly like the original show.
Yep.
You know, it just, I mean, yeah, I'm only seeing the perspective of two characters plus the, you know, the teenager. But at the same time, I'm like, this feels like, you know, this feels like the original show.
Probably. So. My two favorite characters. Like, I don't care about anybody else.
Oh, yeah. I will delight if the original actors, you know, the original teenage actors all come back at some point, you know, in cameos. I'll be delighted by that.
I think, but I got my fill of that in The Ranch. Yeah. It's kind of like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. That works. But yeah, no, it was that just to see Red and that back, it was.
Well, I love Kurtwood Smith because, as you know, he was the president of the Federation for two movies.
Yes, he was.
And then Deborah Jo Rupp is just a delight to watch on screen.
Yes.
Basically, yeah, the child of Eric and Donna, so Red and Kitty's grandchild, comes to visit them for the summer. And things go about as you would expect. My guess is somewhere in the first or second episode, they're going to find a stash of pot, and that's why there's the smoky basement.
Smoky basement.
Oh, for sure.
They're going to find Dad's stash.
I like that she starts to say, we should probably just say, because for you young kids out there, we had Nancy Reagan for the duration of my formative years in the 80s saying, just say no. Just say no. So when she does that, we should just say, then you see the shot of her having smoke. Whoa. I'm like,
nice.
That's the way it should go. I mean, just that ending shot when all the kids are leaving. It's like, get out.
Right.
Oh my God. Give me more Red. More Kurtwood Smith.
Marvel confirmed earlier this year that Avengers Secret Wars is the next Endgame-like MCU adventure, with Avengers, the Kang Dynasty, acting as the introduction, just like Infinity War. And so that's to say we are in the multiverse saga, with Kang being the next big bad villain the Avengers will have to battle, Which Avengers, you ask? Great question. I think it's going to be the Young Avengers. Personally. Maybe. But yeah. Anyway, rumors are coming back that we might see Ultron again.
Ooh.
Get to hear James Spader.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah. I am in love with that man's voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know how much of What If you guys watched, but there was a whole ending of What If where instead of Thanos getting the Infinity Stones,
ooh,
Ultron got them.
Yeah.
Right.
Ooh, I need to watch that one. I haven't watched all of them.
And it was fucking terrifying. So it's such good. A terrifying idea of him having ultimate power. But then it ended with basically, we don't know if he could bust through the dimensional wall. I mean, he was busting through dimensional walls. We don't know if he could show up in the regular MCU universe with that. So scary shit. Yeah. I'm excited to see that.
That would be cool.
Yep.
Wednesday, the television show, not the day.
Yes.
Ooh, Wednesday's first week absolutely destroyed Stranger Things audience record.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Viewers of Tim Burton's Wednesday are just as unblinking as its title character, as the series has just broken Netflix's record for the most hours viewed in 1 week for an English language program, that distinction previously held by Stranger Things Season 4. According to Netflix, which posted the news on Twitter, Wednesday has clocked in at 341.2 million hours viewed in its debut week. This bests Stranger Things Season 4 previous record of 335.1 million hours. Jesus. Which was set during the last week of May, first week of June this year. Mm-hmm. So if you're wondering if you're going to get a Season 2, unless Tim Burton asks for $1 billion to make it, I don't see any reason why.
I don't see why we wouldn't get one. I mean, this...
Even then.
And yeah, I think with Wednesday, the thing about it was... there were very few natural breaks where you felt like, okay, I can stop here and go on. An episode would end, you're like, okay, give me the next one. This is really good. I'm excited about it.
Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for the news.
All right, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're talking comics.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We got a box.
What is it?
Oh, you'll see.
No. What's in the box?
Let's get some comic book news.
Comic book news. The DC Universe Ultra Tier set to expand with thousands of adult-only titles. DC Universe Infinite rewards Ultra subscribers with a new drop of 5,000 Black Label and Vertigo comics from Batman 3 Jokers to Watchmen. Honestly, if I had a bigger pad, I would probably sign up for this one.
Yeah.
But over 5,000 issues have been added to the digital library from American Vampire to Watchmen. Sizable collection of comics spans 1990 to 2020, features both deep cuts like Sandman Mystery Theater, a book that ran from 93 to 99 and featured a film noir take on the Sandman. Wesley Dodds to the popular Batman 3 Jokers, which features the riff on Joker's origin by depicting multiple versions of the Dark Knight's greatest nemesis. Anyway, they kicked it off in October, let subscribers read the new comics only 1 month after they hit store shelves. The subscription service normal plan keeps recently released books off the platform until 6 months after their store release. So there you go.
Nice.
That's the first time I've wanted to sign up for that.
But, didn't they announce it like when they first released Batman Black Label or something like that? And then they're like, no, just kidding. We're not actually going to do it. We're not actually going to do a full line of adult books.
Yeah, Ultra was the, you know, you sign up for Ultra. That's when you're supposed to get the first run stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they weren't putting any Black Label up. And it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
$99 a year to subscribe to DC Universe Infinite Ultra.
Well, that's not bad.
No, now that they've got the fucking Vertigo catalog up.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm interested.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, absolutely.
Because, you know, downloading it onto a tablet and reading it is way easier than digging through the fucking boxes in my closet trying to find it.
Yep. I have my tower of books, my tower of comic books over here. Yes. Yep. All my long boxes and stuff. And it's like, no, I'd rather, you know, and I have trades for everything. But at the same time, pulling it up on my tablet, easy peasy.
It's like the same thing as streaming versus pulling out a DVD or a Blu-ray.
We have a giant shelf, two deep stacked of DVDs and Blu-rays we've bought over the years. And we would rather find it streaming first before we go digging through the shelf.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
No, hell, the only reason I keep my Lord of the Rings extended versions around is for all of the stuff that you can only find on those DVDs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, the behind-the-scenes shit.
Right.
Peter David, iconic Hulk, Young Justice writer, has had to launch a GoFundMe for medical bills. The GoFundMe fundraiser was created November 27th. It's raised over $7,600 as of the article's publication. The description for the fundraiser says, "Hi, everyone. I'm fundraising for author Peter David and his family. He's had some compounded health problems and the bills are piling up on top of kidney failure and steep medical bills incurred from that. He just had another series of strokes and a mild heart attack. We wish him a swift recovery. Send our love and support to his wife, Kathleen, and his family. Let's also pitch in and help with their medical bills and living expenses. Please give what you can to relieve some of the immense stress that this family is going through right now. On behalf of Peter, Kathleen, and the whole family, thank you." Peter David is one of my favorite people in the entire world because when we shared the stage together at a panel at the Salt Lake Comic Con before it was the FanX, mm-hmm. I said hello to the audience and he went, "You have a lovely voice." And I'm like, "I love you forever, Peter David."
He said it with an immense amount of awe too, like, wow.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
It was wonderful. Yeah. It was moving.
So he's only ever written for other properties that I know of. Whether it's Paramount with Star Trek books, Star Trek novels he's written,
yep.
Marvel or DC. So buying his books isn't going to help him much, but definitely contributing to his GoFundMe. And if you go to thecomicbookpodcast.com, click on the link, there will be a link inside that link to take you to the GoFundMe page. Yeah.
Yep. I'm gonna post it on our Facebook page as well.
Yep.
All right.
Let's help out Peter David. He's a
wonderful human being.
A wonderful human being and an amazing writer. Absolutely amazing writer. I was a little fan struck when we shared a stage with him.
By the way, of this recording, mm-hmm. we've raised $71,175 for Peter and his family.
Aww.
Good.
Awesome.
Which is well above the $7,000 mentioned earlier. I'm still posting it.
Mm-hmm. No,
that's fine.
Keep it going. Let's get him up over 100K, please. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, that is it for the news.
All right, let's talk about what we've been reading this week. Joss?
Oh, yeah, start with me, because life got in the way and I didn't pick up a comic book all week, you guys. And I was going to today. So I oftentimes try, I read a lot on Saturdays and on Sunday mornings. Like, I get up and I read a comic or two. But I'm on call this weekend, and it's been super busy all weekend. It's annoying me.
Yeah.
So hopefully next week I can read some comics, though. What about you, Pat? Did you read anything this week?
I did. I actually read one of the books that I said I was going to read, Marvel's nice. Midnight Suns, because the game came out 2 days ago, and I watched a trailer, and I was like, fuck, that looks so good, and I want to play it, but it's an $80 game, so I got to wait till I can afford it. But yeah, so I read the first issue of Midnight Suns, which is on the Marvels of the digital realm. The new ones are not, obviously, yet. But it's so I didn't read any of the other, like, the older Midnight Suns back when it, like, started with Morbius and Johnny Blaze. I didn't read any of the older stuff, so I definitely want to go back and figure out kind of what's happening. But basically, it's something's happening with this chick who's a zombie, and now all the Marvel Midnight Suns are trying to save her. So it looks really freaking sweet. I don't know how much the game and the book seem to like go together, because it doesn't seem like that from the first comic and the trailer of the game. Like, doesn't seem like they have a lot in common. So we'll see. But I'm excited to see how it goes. I'm gonna keep up with it. Yep, looks gorgeous. Both the comic version and the video game.
We were watching some of the trailers, because they do trailers for each character's introduction in the video game, and we're like, this is cool. Although when the animation changed, we were bummed out by it, but otherwise we're like, this is cool.
The trailers have made it look killer.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the game right now on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
It looks fucking amazing.
Yeah. And it got pushed back. I didn't think it was going to release this year. I thought it was going to release next year. But now that I've since seen what the actual fighting style is, I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Because it's one of those turn-based card type games. So a lot of the fighting part of it that usually makes it hard for games to release is preset actions.
Yep.
So it still looks really good, though. I've never played a game this style, like with cards and stuff, but I have played plenty of turn-based, so I don't think it will be hard to get into.
Looks great.
But yeah, it released on Friday, mm-hmm. and I was like, I got onto the PlayStation, and I was like, wait a minute, that game's not out yet. So I clicked on it, and I'm like, oh my god, that game's out! So, yeah. Gonna save up for that one.
Midnight Suns, that looks great.
Yeah.
That looks fantastic. I'm looking at that one, and I'm looking at Guardians of the Galaxy,
mm-hmm.
Because I have heard nothing but good things about Guardians of the Galaxy,
yeah.
Whereas with the Avengers game, you know, a lot of people complained about it.
Yeah.
To the point that somebody bought it for me for Christmas last year, and I still haven't played it. Just because I've heard so much bitching about it, but I want to.
Yeah, I kind of want to play it as well. I do like that Marvel or Midnight Suns. I keep doing this wrong, because the video game is Marvel Midnight Suns, and then the comic is Midnight Suns. But in the 90s, the comic was Midnight Suns, S-O-N-S. So I keep messing it up. What was I saying?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate it when my train derails in the middle of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what you read this week.
I read that. And then I was going to try to get some more stuff out there, but I did not. That one was kind of the one. Because then I bought the audiobook, and now I'm like doing deep research on this team back in the day. So I got a little sidetracked with the one specific one.
That's fun.
Oh, what I was saying was I'm excited because a lot of the characters are all magic-based characters, and that's very fun for me. Because, you know, you do see that, but you don't see them all get together. Apparently, there's a fucking school, come to find out.
Strange Academy.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
I was like, shit, this whole time, I should have got into it.
It's like Hogwarts for superheroes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Cool. So that's it?
That's it.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
My turn.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I'll let you go longer on this one, but I read Doug Wagner's Plush, number one. Fuck me. That guy's a talented son of a bitch.
Yep.
It's great. It's cannibalistic furries at a convention.
Yep. At a furry convention.
If you need any more than that to want to read this, I don't know how to help you with your hollow and lonely existence.
Yes,
indeed. This is from the guy who wrote Plastic,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of my favorite stories about a psycho killer whose inflatable girlfriend is basically kidnapped.
That's such a good book.
Yeah, basically kidnapped by a crime boss. Mayhem ensues. It's fucking great. So I'll move on to Batman, One Bad Day, Mr. Freeze. A lot went into this one. It's Jerry Duggan, whom I adore,
mm-hmm.
Writing this one. And yeah, it's got more emotional hits than you'd think. Jerry Duggan is a very good writer. And then I started Avengers Assemble Alpha and ran out of time. So I was going to finish it, but then, you know, the clock turned to 11 and I'm like, oh, fuck, time to record. So that's me. What about you, sir?
So Plush by Doug Wagner and Daniel Hilliard. I just love in the first shot of the furry convention right up here in the corner. There's Walter, and there's Virginia the blow-up doll.
Yep.
And, you know, just making a cameo right there. I thought that was funny. There's a little bit more of a story going on with the main character. He's basically, he was engaged to this girl, then found out she got knocked up by this other guy. And you're thinking, okay, so that's just a thing. It's not a big deal. Then you find out, oh, no, no. She's the daughter of the town sheriff who wants him to marry, wants the main character to marry his daughter, because she's he's his family has money and influence in the town and he needs help with his reelection. Right. So he wants that. And you also find out that the big dumb deputy is the one who knocked her up. And I'm like, oh, this is good. And meanwhile, he's trying to get the police to help because he comes across these cannibals in furry costumes, eating a person, eating another furry. And he gets put in jail by the sheriff, and the sheriff says, don't nobody mess with him. And then they of course decide they're gonna go mess with him, and meanwhile the furries show up outside the jail cell. You know, you see the furries, you know, the typical barred window, and then you see one of the furries' heads pop up. You're like, oh, this is so much fun. This is so much fun. Yeah, it's almost like a zombie piece with a little intrigue underneath it all, you know, personal intrigue and everything. Doug will tell you his main theme when he writes a book is love. Mm-hmm. It's all about love. So I didn't know how he was going to work love into this one, but apparently, you know, we've got this story about the guy and his girlfriend, his fiance who got knocked up by the sheriff's deputy. I just love the moment where he's like, she got knocked up by your stupid deputy there. And the sheriff looks up, he's like, and the deputy says, what? She doesn't like condoms. The sheriff is just facepalmed after that. He's like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Yeah, fucking brilliant. Fucking brilliant. From DC, we had Superman Kal-El Returns special. Great. Superman's back. He's come back from War World. This takes place between him coming back to War World and DC Final and then the Final Crisis. But he comes back. We get a bunch of great little stories written by, like, Marv Wolfman is one of the writers. Marv Wolfman, as he told us. Marv Wolfman. But, yeah, Marv Wolfman and a few others wrote some stories throughout. It's basically Superman reconnecting with all of his friends, like Jimmy Olsen, reconnecting with Lois. Reconnecting with Bruce. The first scene is him. Bruce is dealing with a problem and he flies in and Bruce is like, where you been? just a great little moment. Justice Society, number one. So Helena Wayne grew up, you know, daughter of Batman and Catwoman. Eventually wound up reforming the Justice Society, but not with Justice Society members, but with the children of villains as opposed to the children of heroes. And Power Girl, because you got to have Power Girl. And then there's this crazy moment where I'm assuming still that it's Perdigation walks in and basically kills everyone, and we take off from there. But we know that Helena is going to wind up going back in time, all the way back to the 1940s, the founding of the original Justice Society, and then working her way up. So she'll be kind of a regular, everybody will know who Helena was. And it's like, will she be kind of one of those out of time ones that she'll see Batman off in the corner and she's like, I want to go talk to my dad, but I can't go talk to my dad kind of thing. I don't know. The Nightwing Annual. So a man comes from England as the butler for this new family. This family has a kid who doesn't speak, but he tortures and kills mice and rats. They caught him just before he almost killed the family cat. And the butler's like, I'll take care of it. And meanwhile, you're hearing the butler's story. He basically was in trouble in England, had killed the guy who was supposed to be the taking over the job as the butler that he met in a bar. And then he killed the guy, assumed his identity, and now he sees this son as a kindred spirit. As the son grows up, at one point he decides to take the son to Haley's circus. And they're there that night that the Graysons fall to their deaths. And the kid suddenly comes to life, so excited. Did you see the look on the kid's face when his parents died? Wasn't that amazing? That was so good. it was like, oh shit, this kid's is psychotic. And he, of course, grows up to be Heartbreaker, who is the current villain for in Nightwing. And now we have a backstory as who this guy is and why he's important to the story and what he means. Finally, Defenders Beyond, number 6 came out, so I'll talk about the run. Number 5 came out, sorry. It was a 5-issue limited series. I don't know why 5 instead of 6. But anyway, I think it's because it gives them an even 100 pages if they do it that way. This is, again, by Al Ewing and Rodriguez doing the art. This one didn't work as well as the first Defenders, in my opinion. They had a mission. They were supposed to go on this mission. They wind up traveling through all these different versions of reality, trying to get to the top of reality so they can deal with this enemy of eternity. And the ending book, they don't really get there. And it turns out it was a Loki story the whole time. And I was like, okay, not digging it. Didn't make sense to me. So yet another of these limited series that did not end well, and I wonder why we have it. And I'm like, I wish they just put out a Defenders series, and then I could complain, well, that story arc didn't go well. But instead, we get stuck with these, you know, 5-issue limited series each time, and big gaps in between. And I'm like, you know what? I know you make money off of suckers like me who are buying the individual books, but just release it as a trade or a graphic novel so we don't have to go through all this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it just annoys me. Anyway, it was fun to see the Beyonder again in his Donny Osmond best. It was fun to see other characters, you know, from the past. When they finally make it to the House of Ideas, and they run into the creator. Which, big disappointment, he didn't have a cheesy mustache and glasses. That was a big disappointment. He was just sort of this gold being sitting there. And I was like, yeah, that's not quite working for me. But yeah, in the end, it was still interesting that they met the creator. And the creator is this, you know, this being that he's like, okay, no, you will find your sister and you will have to forget about your son and you will have this. But at the same time, it's just this giant being that is supposed to their God, but they're like, but there's one above you. And kind of the Blue Marvel kind of gets him in trouble because he says, there's one above you. And then he releases all these monsters from the early days of Marvel. You know, when Marvel was first started, it was all monster books in the early 60s, right? And so all the monsters suddenly attack. And they're the classic Kirby monsters. That was awesome. And they're fighting them. And meanwhile, the Blue Marvel finally gets up to where he can talk to the creator again. And he's like, no, this is what I'm trying to say. We need to reach, there's got to be somebody above you and we're trying to reach them. And then it winds up turning out that no, they don't need to reach him. And Loki leaves. And it was like, okay. You just made this a big Loki story that it didn't need to be that, but okay, fine. End of limited series again. Weird.
Sorry, dude.
Thanks for making me spend the money on nothing. But that's what I read. Today is Tuesday. That means tomorrow's Wednesday. And when you're not watching Wednesday on Netflix, you need to pick up our picks of the week.
You pick up the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
What are you looking forward to this week? Let's start with Pat.
So my mainstream pick is going to be Daredevil. I've been wanting to read it, and then Woman Without Fear as well, because it looks so fucking gorgeous with the art. So, like, yeah, those are my picks, because the next one for Daredevil is coming out, issue 6. And I think Woman Without Fear has finished, so that's
it
not,
has, yeah.
Yeah, that's not yeah, it has. My pick, but the Daredevil that goes with it is my pick, for mainstream. And then for Image,
we'll come back to Image Indie here.
Cool.
So okay. Joss, what's your mainstream pick?
In addition to Daredevil, because that's one of my ongoings, I am super excited that the Variants number 5 is coming out.
Yes.
Coming out, because that's going to drop. That's Gail Simone writing about Jessica Jones. And again, a 5-issue limited run. And so this is going to be the finale, and I'm excited to see what happens with it.
Please don't end this one stupid, Gail. Please don't end this one stupid like you did with Defenders.
It's Gail. It'll end with an invisible bear.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking Sasquatch. Sasquai? Yetis? Bigfoots?
Yetai.
Yetai?
Yeah.
Let's see. Marvel is kicking off in the new series of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. I love this pair. I always have. I always will. I don't know why. I am certainly not the target demographic for it, but the whole goddamn thing of a little girl and her pet Tyrannosaurus Rex just fucking cracks me up. So basically, yeah, I'll take a look at Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 1. And then, of course, my ongoing Zdarsky's Batman number 130 is coming out. And even if I wasn't collecting Batman, the covers this week are fucking awesome. So that's something.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, boss?
My mainstream picks this week, we have Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 1 coming out. This is a, well, it's a new number 1, but it's an ongoing series. This is getting a new creative team. Writer Cody Ziegler coming over from Spider-Punk, which I was not impressed with in the least. I'm hoping he does better with this one. I thought we were getting the illustrator from Spider-Punk as well, but it looks like Federico Vincentini is coming on. Maybe the illustrator from Spider-Punk will come on later. I don't mind if we don't get that illustrator. I didn't like his art. It just wasn't for me. I would rather have something a little more standard. So yeah, let's do this one, because I like Vincentini's work. But yeah, it's Miles Morales is back, folks. And then from DC Comics, we get Warzone, which is basically going to take a bunch of, this is from Dark Crisis. It's just going to take a bunch of little stories of things as the Hall of Justice is about to fall to all the villains who are chained by the darkness. And it shows the different groups fighting, whether it's the Damian Wayne's Dark Army, or whether it's the Flashes or the Lanterns. Looks like we even get a thing with the Spectre taking on Raven. I don't remember which one of them was chained. One of them was, I know. But we'll see. Yeah, I'm enjoying the hell out of Dark Crisis. So let's see how this one. This is just the sort of the penultimate moment before it all wraps up. Indie picks for me this week from Image Comics. I don't know, man. Hexware. This is Tim Seeley, who I always like his work. This is a corporate ruled world where class inequality is greater than ever. And the 99% are all drawn to neo-spiritualism and hedge magic, which is, well, that's a lot like where we're living anyway. They got neo-spiritualism, but hedge magic has been replaced by QAnon conspiracies, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Anyway, when their teenage daughter is murdered, the Marx family is left asking the gods what they did to deserve this, but their android maid, Witchware, has a different approach, perhaps if she asked the devil. And, of course, that all will go crazy, so the Magic Order meets Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? and then from Boom Studios, I'm looking forward to Know Your Station. Another one that is very similar. The 1% got their wish. They got off the planet before it ate itself. You know, they're destroying the planet, so they want to get off the planet because they know it's getting they're destroying it for resources. So they get off the planet and they're living in a private sanctuary in space. And but then a murderer is loose on their little paradise world, and he's targeting the super rich. So Soon Elise, an employee of the Abilinear space station, is wrapped up in a deadly investigation, which each issue featuring a new diabolically different kill. And this was one where I'm not just recommending it. I threw this one in my hold because I'm like, this looks like fun. It's a 6-issue limited series from Boom Studios. And yeah, watch the 1% get their comeuppance. That's what I want to see.
It sounds amazing.
Yep. What's your indie pick, Jeff?
Well, I got from Image Comics, All Against All, number one. This is Alex Pacnadel from DC's mm-hmm. Vampires All Out War and Giga. I liked Giga. Yeah. Basically, distant future. There's no more Earth, but a race of alien conquerors known as the Operators have preserved its most savage animals in an artificial jungle environment. With no bodies of their own, the Operators move from world to world, harvesting bodies for their organic exosuits. They use to wage their endless wars. And one of the Operators tries to take over the habitat's sole human specimen, helpless. And that's when things go awry. And it sounds like fun. It sounds like a lot of fun. And then from Ablaze Comics, I'm really looking hard at 14. It's a silent graphic novel created by Filipino artist Manix Abrera. He's an award-winning graphic novel writer. This is his second silent graphic novel. It tells the story of a human who mysteriously discovers a 13th floor in his building and finds himself in the middle of a storytelling session among different mythological creatures of Philippine folklore. Mm. It looks fucking cool.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. What do we do? I think it's Jocelyn, right?
Yeah.
It is. I am going to pick up from Dark Horse Comics. It's only Teenage Wasteland. Now, not necessarily because the story sounds really good, because it's about a Mexican-American high schooler who decides to throw a party to launch him and his buds into popularity, or at least get them noticed by girls. But it says for fans of The Nice House on the Lake and What's the Furthest Place from Here, or other comics with really long titles and cool high concepts.
Yes.
And that line, like that little line was like, all right, I'll give it a try. So I'm going to look for It's Only Teenage Wasteland number one. How about you, Pat? What's your indie pick?
So my indie pick this week is Noctera, which looks really good. Dark Val, in the special one-shot featuring awesome art by Francis Mananupol. Val reflects on her hard and sometimes merciless past in the wake of shocking events at the conclusion of Pedal to the Metal, but when an unlikely ally reveals a way to find Val's convoy and take them to Eos, Val must go against her every instinct in order to trust this new partner. I'm really hoping it's on the cover. Is her... and a dog. So I'm really just hoping that her new partner is the dog, and it's like amazing because it's her and a dog.
That'd be brilliant.
Right?
Yeah.
She has to put her trust in the puppy dog. Mm-hmm. Into it. So that's my indie pick.
Awesome. Well, I think that wraps it up there. Anything else this week, kids?
Nope.
Well, I will invite you, dear listener, if you've made it this far, to, as always, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/defendmedia. This week we are going to talk about the top 10 worst superhero movies, according to Rotten Tomatoes. And I went ahead and went, well, what about this movie? And looked up its score, and I have now the top 30 worst superhero movies according to Rotten Tomatoes. So we're going to talk about those. So it's going to be a big one, a lot of fun. We'll be laughing and carrying on, and you'll have a great time if you join us on Patreon. So get over there, subscribe, join us. It supports the shows, and we need to make our little Patreon squad a full-on Patreon platoon, and we got to do it now. We got to do it this month because the big bill is coming.
Yep.
And I have a hosting bill I dread, and it's nowhere near the hosting bill we have for this show. So, yeah. We got the hosting bills coming up, so we got to pay the bills. So join us on Patreon. It's how we support the shows. Apart from just pulling money out of Jeff's already empty pockets. So join us, please, please, please. And I will say, as I always do, until a big universe crossing story becomes just a Loki story, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
Did you get one yet?
I don't think I did. Damn it.
Damn it.
For Stan.
For Asgard.